Content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Martha Potter from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading selections from Our State Magazine. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting this podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. In this episode, we'll dig deeper into the theme of the February issue of Our State Magazine, which is Be Our Guest. And our first article is entitled Harmony on the Hill, a Henderson County Bed and Breakfast Saves a Special Course for Last. The last few nibbles still linger on their plates when the guests begin murmuring. French doors welcome the morning light, illuminating half-empty juice flutes and just-picked flowers in bud vases. As they savor the final bites of breakfast, flaky herbed quiche with roasted potatoes and crisp maple bacon, plus a baked caramel apple tart for dessert, the diners are already anticipating what comes next. Craig Verm, still holding a coffee carafe, smiles knowingly and turns toward his wife, Karen, who's already two steps ahead and moving to the foyer. She sits down at the piano, locks eyes with Craig, and in an act of coordination refined over decades of duets, the silence is broken. My Lord, what a morning! My Lord, what a morning! Oh, my Lord, what a morning! When the stars begin to fall. Craig's baritone belts out proud and pronounced, as if he's reaching toward the back of a grand auditorium. For many years, the couple did just that, on hundreds of stages, to roaring applause. These days, though, their audience sits 6 feet away, not 30 rows back. Some guests nod along. A couple clutches hands. All smile with delight. You won't find it on a menu, this final offering of the breakfast hour, but the private concert, the fourth course, as it's been dubbed, has become quite a highlight for visitors to the bed and breakfast on Tiffany Hill, the seven-suite inn in Mills River, just northwest of Hendersonville. The Verm's story began in 2002 at the University of Cincinnati College Conservatory of Music. Karen says it was the kind of first date you plan when you aren't convinced you want one, where you forego the dress and the reservation and instead opt for sweats and takeout. Busy with her graduate studies and close friend group, Karen wasn't fully reciprocating Craig's level of interest. Yet, after a movie and Thai food, the two ended up in the kitchen, where they stirred, baked, and awaited raspberry chocolate pastries. Music played. The dessert puffed perfectly, and as fate would have it, that first date paved the way for many more collaborations in the kitchen, for caregiving, for entertaining, and later for cooking and serving daily breakfasts to guests at the inn. The Verms married in 2004, and the coming years took them from Pittsburgh to Houston to West Virginia as they followed professional music careers and raised their daughter, Lauren, 15, a visual artist and musical theater talent in her own right. Craig sang on opera stages throughout the United States, plus South America, Europe, and Asia, while Karen taught and accompanied at some of the country's leading music schools, including Rice and Carnegie Mellon universities. In 2023, the family spent 6 weeks in Europe. Craig was recording an opera with the BBC, while Karen was a pianist for the West Virginia University Choir. Feeling at a crossroads in a career, Karen daydreamed of a change of pace. She'd been enamored with the inns they'd called home throughout their travels, the idyllic properties, the encounters with new people, the interesting cities, and, too, the delicious meals. Soon, she found herself Googling bed and breakfasts for sale, and that search led her to Tiffany Hill and Courage is Abundant in the Abstract, the book its founder, Selena Einwichter, wrote about her own leap of faith from the corporate world to innkeeping. The Verms, who had family in the area, began visiting Tiffany Hill later that fall. They were smitten with the 5 acres of porches and patios, gardens and gathering places, all tucked into a serene rural setting, and finalized their purchase of the property in April of 24. We joked when we were younger about how lovely it would be to shift everything and run a B&B, But we certainly didn't think it was going to happen in our 40s, Karen said. It's fun to look back and think, oh my gosh, God's been making us ready all along. The couple is quick to say that innkeeping is an evolution of their professional music careers, not a full retreat from them. Karen, age 49, is the pianist for their church, Grace Mills River, and Craig, 46, still takes in occasional opera performances. But, he adds, there's been a joy of music that has returned for both of us now that our livelihoods aren't dependent on how we perform. That joy is particularly evident in their fourth course. While they initially assumed these many morning concerts would happen by request as guests spotted the piano or heard about their backgrounds, it was soon clear that this was something most everyone would enjoy. Craig, who had his first gig at New York's Metropolitan Opera last spring, said he took home something valuable from that experience. I learned I loved this, he says, motioning around at the end, so much more. I love opera, and I love the Met. I love the stage. I love the camaraderie, the adrenaline, and the storytelling. There's magic to it. But there's a different kind of magic here, he continues, looking in people's eyes and seeing them well up with tears. It can be a kind of spiritual moment. Versus when you're on stage and looking out into lights. Here, it's intimate and personal, and you can't escape its power. Craig's vocal style, full-throated and full-body expressive, follows his operatic training. Opera is unamplified. It's an art form that predates electricity, so you have to use the natural acoustics of your instrument and of the hall you're singing in. Complementing his vocals, Karen is an extraordinary accompanist. You can put any music in front of her and she'll read it, Craig says. And not just read it, she performs it. Their repertoire varies from classics to musical theater, opera, and even pop. The couple especially enjoys performing songs with personal connections to the folks at their table. Today, for instance, Craig turns to Donna Silverman and Jeffrey Carlson, frequent guests and dear friends of Tiffany Hill. He smiles and gives them a nod as Karen plays the first chords. Hearing that cue, Jeffrey takes Donna's hands into his, and they lean their heads close together. This is the one they've been waiting for. Some enchanted evening, you may see a stranger. You may see a stranger across a crowded room. And somehow you know even then, that somewhere you'll see her again and again. Donna and Jeffrey first visited the inn in June 24, just a month after the Verms took ownership. Their first morning following the decadent three-course breakfast, the couple was astonished when music filled the halls. It was very emotional, Donna recalls, between his voice and her piano playing, and being right there among the incredible acoustics of the dining room. It was like my body reverberated with the music. The Verms began the next day with a moving rendition of Some Enchanted Evening, not knowing that the song would spark the memory of Jeffrey and Donna's first meeting. Some enchanted evening, someone may be laughing. You may hear her laughing across a crowded room. Before leaving, Donna penned in the guestbook how much they enjoyed the fourth course, and the name stuck. Since then, the Florida couple has made many more visits. And each time, the Verms play the favorites that Donna and Jeffrey return for. Soon, it's time for this morning's fourth and final song, a nod to both the Audrey Hepburn classic and the Breakfast at Tiffany's that guests have just indulged in. Moon River, wider than a mile, I'm crossing you in style someday. Oh, dream maker, you heartbreaker, wherever you're going, I'm going your way. Two drifters off to see the world. There's such a lot of world to see. While their careers have taken the Verms around the globe, these days the world of Western North Carolina beckons, from the trails and waterfalls in nearby Pisgah and DuPont Forest to the shopping and dining in Mills River, Brevard, and Hendersonville. Other days, these drifters are just as content to pass the time at Tiffany Hill, harvesting herbs and berries for breakfast, baking a cake for a guest's birthday, or preparing for new arrivals. Approaching the last verse, Craig slides in closer to his wife, then reaches a hand out toward the group as he croons the final words with a wink of his eye and a twist of the classical lyrics. "We're after the same rainbow's end, waiting round the bend, my huckleberry friend, Mills River and me." The guests stand and clap in warm appreciation. Karen touches her heart. Craig wraps an arm around her waist. The ovation is quieter here, fewer hands, smaller audience, but to the Verms, the sound is still in harmony. The bed and breakfast on Tiffany Hill is located on Ray Hill Road in Mills River, North Carolina, and their website is tiffany-hill.com. That's tiffany-hill.com. The next article features Moorhead Manor Bed and Breakfast in Durham. Home and board. For nearly 30 years, the owners of Moorhead Manor Bed and Breakfast have shared their historic home with travelers they treat like family. It's 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning in Durham when the last pair of guests descends the mahogany staircase of Moorhead Manor Bed and Breakfast, their steps sinking into the emerald green carpet that matches the foyer walls. Morning light slips through the front door and catches the crystal chandelier, scattering flecks of brightness into the adjoining dining room, where light and the scent of breakfast mingle in the air. As the couple settles at a table beneath enormous leaded glass windows, Monica Edwards seems to materialize out of nowhere. "Good morning," she chirps, placing a carafe of fresh coffee on the sideboard. "How did you sleep?" "They're from Raleigh, lingering overnight after a show at the nearby Durham Performing Arts Center." Monica remembers to ask about that, too. They join another pair of guests from Pittsburgh in the cozy dining room. Monica serves zucchini pecan waffles with fresh fruit, some with sausage, some without, because she knows each guest's preferences and dietary restrictions. Her husband and co-owner Daniel appears in the dining room, and once the guests are settled into their meals, they pull out chairs to join conversations. Monica and Daniel prepared for this moment long before anyone else stirred. Their alarm clock went off at 6 a.m. in the quiet part of the day when the house still held its breath. They walk down to the main floor, across ornate rugs and past walls lined with art, ignoring comfortable furniture that beckoned them to sit. In the office off the living room, they reviewed the day's arrivals and departures before moving to the kitchen to warm the waffle iron for the first day's diners, who would take their seats at 7. For nearly 30 years, the Edwardses have welcomed travelers into their home, a bed and breakfast in the heart of Durham. Running the inn is constant work. Cooking, cleaning, hosting events, tending the grounds, maintaining the 8,000-square-foot historic house. But the labor isn't just physical, it's emotional, too. Making the guests feel at home, serving as ambassadors to Durham, and sometimes carrying the weight of being the first Black family to host someone. What sustains them is the community they've built. The strangers turned friends who return time after time, the connections that stretch long past breakfast. It all started with a surprise. In 1995, Monica had just been laid off from her job in accounting and human resources management at a biotech company where Daniel's co-workers gifted the couple at a Durham bed and breakfast. Daniel didn't tell his new bride. Instead, he blindfolded her and drove her around for an hour before finally stopping in a driveway where she heard the crunch of gravel and the music of wind chimes. Then a door creaks open, Monica remembers, and a woman comes out and says, "Welcome to Virginia, Monica." When Daniel untied the blindfold, she realized they were still in Durham, at the now shuttered Blooming Garden Inn. Inside, lace curtains swayed in the windows, a canopy bed awaited, and a bucket of champagne chilled. Monica cried from the joy of it all. She had a revelation the next morning. "This is the best thing since sliced bread. Ever since we've been together," she told Daniel, "we've been hosting and entertaining other people in our home. We can do this and get paid." For a year, the couple visited inns whenever they could, studying what worked. Monica took a new job at Central Carolina Bank and Trust Company. Daniel continued to work as a police officer and did interior design as a hobby. They thought opening their own inn was decades away, a retirement dream. But Daniel had noticed a stately 1910 mansion on the corner of Moorhead and Vickers Avenues. Built by a tobacco executive in one of Durham's earliest neighborhoods, the painted brick home featured a circular driveway, a carriage house, and manicured hedges. It wasn't for sale, but he wanted it to be their inn. Later that year, it was. Daniel had started volunteering for a veteran interior designer whom he asked to introduce him to the homeowners. When the aging owners heard of Monica and Daniel's interest, they took the opportunity to downsize. In 1997, the Edwardses opened Moorhead Manor Bed and Breakfast, welcoming guests through its federal-style doors. Inside, the home's original fireplaces, heart pine floors, and six-door icebox refrigerator endure, blending old Southern formality with the warmth that the couple has added through their rich colors, lively jazz music drifting through the first floor, and the feeling that anyone is welcome anytime. Monica and Daniel live on the home's third floor, a 1,200-square-foot space above the five guest suites, though it rarely feels separate. "You're always on," Daniel says. "When our feet hit the floor, we need to be prepared and presentable because you don't know when you're going to get to go back to your quarters." Monica shakes her head and smiles. "Even when we don't have guests, if we come downstairs in our robes or whatever, inevitably, someone's going to ring the doorbell." Running the inn has meant that their lives are often intertwined with those of their guests. One man from the West Coast stayed again and again while undergoing cancer treatments in Durham. When he died, the Edwardses grieved. You can't help but become connected and invested in the next human, Daniel says. They learned that early on. Monica's mother, known to guests as Granny, died just 2 years after the inn opened. Visitors who had come to love her sent cards and attended the funeral. The compassion they have for their guests is always returned to them. Connections like these have carried the couple through almost three decades in an industry where innkeepers of color are still rare. When they opened, Monica said, there were fewer than 30 black-owned inns in the nation. Today, she believes that the Moorhead Manor is one of the only three in North Carolina. In the early days, Daniel recalls, we had a white couple come. They were shocked. We could obviously see that they were taken aback. "Yes, hi, I'm black. When that happens, we just have to be professional and address the issues. We've had some folks that just couldn't stay." He nods knowingly. Yeah. Instead of allowing those moments to weigh them down, they've come to see their work as bridge building. "I feel as though we're part of the world's greatest social experiment, Daniel continues, "and I always like surprising people, so it makes it fun for me." For the Edwardses, one of the most meaningful encounters was with a guest they called Mrs. Shepherd. In her 70s, she returned often from her home in New Jersey while visiting her brother-in-law. On her seventh stay, she stopped them in the foyer. "I must say to you, this has been enlightening for me," she told them. She explained that she had never had black friends, never shared intimacy across racial lines. "She thanked us," Daniel says, "and we were standing there like they're snotting like two-year-olds because it was powerful." When you sit down and you have conversations with people, you realize you have more in common than different. They welcome guests not only into their home and lives, but also to Durham itself, a city once characterized as rough and gritty, now steadily reinventing itself as a paid place for refined food and culture. Monica grew up in Southern Pines. Daniel's from New Jersey. Yet after nearly three decades here, they pride themselves on showing guests another side of their chosen city. "We are Durham," Monica says. "We always refer to ourselves as ambassadors for the city. We are reflections of what Durham has to offer." And as such, they host public events like wine tastings and a Jazz on the Lawn series. Once an attendee of the latter told Daniel, "You made me fall in love with Durham all over again." The inn has remained a retirement plan for the Edwardses, not just not in the way they'd imagined. Everything has to come to an end, Daniel says matter-of-factly. In a few years, he and Monica will be in their mid-60s, and they plan to close the inn and turn the house into a co-op for family and friends. The Golden Girls knew what they were talking about. We're social creatures. It actually extends your life, Daniel says with a smile. And if you fall, someone will find you before you're dead. After the last of the breakfast dishes are cleared, the guests from Raleigh gather their bags to leave. Monica hugs them goodbye, and Daniel shakes their hands. They agree to keep in touch. The couple says they'll likely return for another Deepak show or for the wine tasting. Back in the dining room, Daniel sits and reflects. Sometimes you don't know you're going to connect with someone today, but when you do, oh, wow, those moments are amazing. We get to live a life that many people can only imagine. But he can't linger for long. There are rooms to be cleaned and laundry to be done and roses to be pruned and new guests to be greeted and the next breakfast to be planned. Monica has already disappeared. By tomorrow morning, the scent of coffee and bacon will drift through the halls again and the chandelier will catch the light once more. And Monica and Daniel will be up and ready, waiting to welcome the next guests. The Moorhead Manor Bed and Breakfast is located at 914 Vickers Avenue in Durham, and their website is moorheadmanor.com. For our last article, we'll step away from the theme articles for the moment, and we'll check out one of the regular columns, The Taste of Our State, Savoring North Carolina Through the Flavors of Home. This is entitled Back on the Grind. When a chef discovers her grandfather's old mill, she and her family set out to revive a southern tradition fueled by grit and grist. I've spent many an afternoon whiled away under the shade trees in my parents' backyard. We sit in lawn chairs and chat about everything and nothing. 20-some-odd years ago, I mentioned to my dad that someone had given me a bag of delicious, old-timey, stone-ground cornmeal and that I sure wish I knew where to get some more. Dad replied nonchalantly, "Well, you know, I've got Papa Will's mill." If the thoughts that zipped through my mind in that moment had a soundtrack, it would be a recording scratching to a quick stop. All I could sputter out was, "Say what now?" My dad is one of those retired fellows who's accumulated all sorts of things that are covered by blue tarps, cinched with bungee cords, and anchored by rocks. Unbeknownst to me, under one of those tarps was the Meadows Mill that my maternal grandfather, great-grandfather, purchased in 1923. We even had the original bill of sale from when he purchased it in Wilkes County and hauled it up the mountain to his home in Zionville. It's the type of mill that folks once used when there was no access to a running stream or a mill pond that would turn the large, picturesque water wheel that comes to mind when most of us think of a grist mill. These mills were considered portable, even though they were the size of a small refrigerator and weighed hundreds of pounds. They were designed to handle small batch jobs, such as supplying families and neighbors with homegrown cornmeal for a few months. I understand that not everyone has a dad who is willing and able to restore a family heirloom mill as a treasured gift for his only child and grandchild, but a few traditional mills still turn in North Carolina and sell their meal, which means every one of us can taste the real deal, no tarp necessary. The backyard revelation set several things into motion, including the mill. Tickled and motivated by my utter glee, my dad cleaned up our mill, found someone to sharpen the two millstones, and figured out how to run the thing in the backyard and at the occasional festival. The process is neither quick nor easy. It takes several people, and at least one of them must understand the intricacies. I try to help out each time he sets it up with hopes that I'm learning enough to someday be able to keep things turning for another generation. But the truth is that my daughter is the mechanically inclined one waiting in the wings. She's been obsessed with the mill since she was little. Her first job was to scoop the cornmeal from the collector box into sacks. The air around the mill fuzzes with floating bits, so by the time we'd worked through our usual batch of 400 pounds of corn, she'd look like she'd been dredged. Our beloved mill is a delightful means to fresh, stone-ground cornmeal. We grind a variety of Appalachian white bent corn that we buy from a good friend in Alexander County. The meal is whole grain and perishable, closer to a fresh ingredient than an everlasting commodity. It tastes like corn even when cooked. With rich, robust, complex flavor and the aroma of fresh cream, a bit of butter and a clean earthiness with a touch of sweetness. Every cupful captures the essence of corn and a tradition worth keeping. And to round out the episode, I'm going to focus on the quiz and pose some questions to you. The title is On the Rocks, From Precious Metals to Glittering Gemstones. There's much to be discovered below our state's surface. This is question number one. North Carolina boasts more than 300 types of rocks and minerals, with more than 70 having economic value and more than 50 mined or quarried commercially. This wealth of geological treasures has earned our state which of the following sparkling nicknames? If you choose A, it's nature's sample case, B, nature's treasure trove, or C, nature's treasure chest. If you chose A, you would be correct, nature's sample case. Number two, before the 1848 California Rush, North Carolina led the nation in producing a precious metal. Its first documented U.S. discovery, a 17-pound nugget in Cabarrus County, made the industry second only to farming in the number of North Carolinians it employed. What was the metal? Was it A, gold, B, silver, C, copper? If you choose gold, which is A, you would be correct. In an 1869-carat green gemstone discovered in Alexander County in 2003 helped to cement its status as North Carolina's official state precious stone. What gem is it? Is it A, hiddenite, B, emerald, or C, tourmaline? If you chose B, emerald, you got it right. Number four, North Carolina's official state rock was named by the General Assembly in 1979. First quarried here in the mid-1700s, this durable, coarse-grained rock is still quarried today, including in Mount Airy. What is it? Is it A, marble, B, sandstone, or C, granite? If you chose C, granite, you are right. Number five, the first silver mine in the U.S. opened in Davidson County in 1839 and operated intermittently until 1882. Though the mine is no longer active, the community that grew up around it still exists. What's its name? A, Silver Valley, B, Silver Town, or C, Silver Hill? The answer is C, Silver Hill. Oh, that sound says we've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. We hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll join us next time. I'm Martha Potter, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974, and they can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Our State Magazine is available to podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. For questions or comments, give us a call at 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.